Good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to speak in on chapters 25 to 27 of Genesis. As we know, last week Dad preached on chapter 24 about Abraham's life and Isaac meeting Rebecca. So now I get to conclude Abraham's life, because in this chapter, unfortunately, he does die. Well, not unfortunately. I'll explain why it's not unfortunate. Okay. So, it starts, well, it doesn't start actually. I start from chapter 5 to 6, because the beginning of it is just summing up everything, basically, that's already been summed up in the last chapter. So, it says, Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. So, he's approaching his death, and he's making sure everything is sorted before he dies. He knows he's going to die. When you read the chapter, sometimes, when I read these verses, I thought, why has he sent them away? That sounds a bit harsh. Why are they sent away? Why does Isaac get to stay? But if you know the story of Isaac, then you know Isaac's the chosen son. So he is the heir to everything, essentially. Anyway, when I read it, I was asking God, as I was reading it, why did you send him away? And he was like, it was pretty obvious, actually. If you read the full chapter, then you'll see it's pretty obvious. It's like, oh, okay. Well, for now, when I saw it, I thought, okay, maybe he's being quite kind because he's letting them have their own life. They're not tied to Isaac. They can go wherever. But actually, the reason why he does it is becomes quite apparent, but we're not there just yet. So now we go, 7 to 11, these verses. Abraham lived 175 years. Then Abraham breathed his last and died at the good old age, an old man and full of years. He was gathered to his people. His sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre, in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar the Hittite. The field Abraham had brought from the Hittites. There, Abraham was buried with his wife, Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who then lived in Beer Lehi Rocha. They are not easy to pronounce. What a way to die. 175 years of age. That is a lot of life for someone. We are lucky if we get to 90 here, and he's got 175. As he dies, he's surrounded by every blessing God's ever given him. He's made sure that everything he's ever had is settled. His accounts, his land, everything is sealed and delivered to Isaac, the son whom he was quite willing to sacrifice a few chapters before, the promised son, the one he'd waited a very, very long time for. Now, that part shows how amazing God is, because Abraham followed everything God said. Not everything, to be fair, as we'll see, but he had a relationship with God, and wherever he went, he trusted God. Before he even went, in fact, he didn't know where he was going, and God said, trust me, and he went. And he's earned those 175 years. The second account that comes in the next chapter is the account of Ishmael, whom Sarah's slave Hagar, the Egyptian, bore to Abraham. Then it goes on to tell you the names of his sons, which I'm going to tell you now. Nehaboth, the firstborn of Ishmael. Kedar, Abdeel, Mizpam, Mishma, Rumah, Massa, Hadad, Tema, Jeter, Nephish, Kedemah. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are the names of the 12 tribal rulers according to their settlements and camps. Keep that in line, there's 12 there, just so you know. Ishmael lived 137 years. He breathed his last, and he was gathered to his people. His descendants settled in the area of Havilah to Shur, near the east border of Egypt, as you go towards Asher. And they lived in hostility towards all tribes related to them. Which we know, anyway, because those 12 tribes we talk about, all of what's going on at the moment stems from those 12 tribes. And the 12 tribes of Israel. If you didn't know that, that's who they're at war at. And that's what it says, they will be in hostility to everyone who's related to them. Not really a nice way to end that, but that's what it says. Now we talk about Ishmael. Ishmael was a mistake. Quite a harsh word to say for a human being, but he was. In the grand scale of things, of what God had planned, he was not part of it. If you read your Bible, you know God didn't mention him. However, Sarah factored him in because she didn't believe that God would give her a son. How did she factor him in? Because she made Abraham sleep with her slave girl, Hagar, from Egypt. Not from their tribe, not part of their lineage. That's what happened. As you can see from that chapter there, God didn't hold that against Ishmael. Ishmael still lived a good long life, and he was still blessed. He was still known as one of Abraham's sons. He was still given, as it says in the chapter before, the verses before, sorry, gifts and presents from his dad before his dad died. His dad didn't despise him and say, no, actually, you're not legitimate. You can't have any of this. He gave him what he was owed as the older son. Not the promised son, but the older son. Unfortunately, there were still consequences from that blessing. And that is the 12 tribes of Ishmael. God will make a blessing out of our mistakes. He will. He does all the time. However, consequences still exist. That's how it works. But that there, to me, I don't know about you guys, but to me shows the love of God, because technically, this person who shouldn't even exist, God has still kept in line. He still kept him. He still looked after him. He still gave him a land and a people and blessings from his dad. That shows God's love to me. Because in this day and age, I hear it all the time with the kids I work with. You're not legitimate. The word bastard is thrown about quite a lot. And that's how they're treated. Not nicely. You're not part of this family. But Abraham made sure Ishmael was part of it. And when I was reading it, God said that to me. He said, there's a lot of people who are not your normal people, the people who should come in, who should be part of the promised ones, the sons. They are the mistakes. Not saying they shouldn't have been born. I'm saying they're not part of it. And God brings them in and lets them be part of it. That's a conclusion to Abraham's life. And it's quite a good conclusion, given everything he's gone through. And then you have the conclusion to Ishmael's life. And now, everything has been passed on to Isaac and Rebecca, who we know from the stories now, his wife. And this is their account and their children. Verse 19. This is the account of the family line of Abraham's son, Isaac. Abraham, who became the father of Isaac. And Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Armenian from Paddan Aram, and the sister of Laban from Yarmin. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayers, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other with Hinnah and said, "Why is this happening?" And she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. "Two nations are in your room, and two people from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." I'll just stop there for a second. The older will serve the younger. Doesn't really fit in line with the plans, because the older should have got everything. Then it goes to the younger. Speaking as a younger sibling, that's how it works. Not how it works in this family. Not how it works in Abraham's family. From Isaac, because if you remember, Isaac is a younger sibling. Ishmael's the elder. Ideally, everything should have gone to Ishmael, but it didn't. And it continues on in this line. It is a theme through this family. And I don't know why it's a theme, if I'm honest with you. I've not really got an answer, but when I read it, it seems like because of Ishmael and Isaac, God made it a thing. He made it part of this family. Because it goes all the way up to Joseph's line. We were studying Joseph, because we're a bit ahead of you guys in youth. And we discovered that same verse is in Joseph. When it comes to the conclusion of Joseph's story, and he asks him to bless his sons, he puts his hand on the wrong head, basically, and he says, "This one we blessed first." And Joseph freaks out and goes, "No, no, that's the eldest, that's the youngest." And he goes, "Nope, I know what I'm doing. This is what it says." And it's the exact same verse. The older will serve the younger. God doesn't make mistakes. If he's put that in there, it's in there for a reason. And I actually didn't know. I'll hold my hands up and be honest. I was preaching on this when we had that discussion in youth. So, you know, God knows what he's doing there. The conversations we had, I won't name the kids who are here because they might be a bit shy, but they gave me an explanation of their own. I said, "Why do you think that is?" And one of them said, "I think it's because God doesn't do things conventionally." I was like, okay, that actually makes sense, because he doesn't. You see that in the New Testament, they're all like, "Nope, these are the rules. Don't eat on the Sabbath. You don't do that. You don't do that." And he goes, "No, that's not what I said." One of the things that he wanted me to highlight, which was quite an interesting discussion in youth, is when we acquired this church, for instance, there were two people who had been here longer, who were older, more experienced, who could have easily took it over and led it. And that was David Bradley and Eddie Marshall. However, they didn't. They asked this man, who is my dad. That's why he's looking at me like that. They asked him instead. He's a lot younger. He's not as experienced. He doesn't actually know anything about this particular church when we came here. He knows Uncle Eddie, but that's it. And God gave him this church. Now, the two older men could have said, "No, God, I've been here longer. I'm older. I should have that." And they didn't. They listened to God because God clearly told them, "No, that's who I want. I want the younger one. I want that man to lead this church, and I want him to change it for the better." And he has. Can't deny that, he has. But as we were having that discussion, what the young lady says, I won't name her, is God doesn't do things conventionally. And he doesn't. He likes to flip things on its head. While you think you should be doing that, he tells you to do something else. I had a whole other scripture planned. And he flipped it on its head on Friday night at 1 o'clock in the morning and said, "Nope, talk about this. Not conventional." We'll continue on the verse. Verse 24. When the time came for her to give birth, there were two twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red. His whole body was like a hairy garment, so they named him Esau, which quite literally translates to hairy in Hebrew. After he came out, Jacob, his son, his brother, came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. Again, translation literally of Jacob translates to seizing the heel. They're very practical with their names back there. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to him. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. This sets the scene. We have two brothers who live in a family with favoritism. Favoritism is not good. To have one child who you love more than the other and clearly say it doesn't end well, as we'll see. Verse 29 says, once Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. Jacob replied, first, sell me your birthright. Look, I'm about to die, Esau said. What good is birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and he drank and he got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. Everyone knows this story, right? From Sunday school? I thought so. One of the worst decisions probably ever made over food. Not even very good food. Lentil stew, of all things. It could have had something amazing, and he chose stew. He clearly did not recognize what he was giving away to give it over something so ridiculous as stew. But then again, to be fair, maybe the stew looked great to him. Maybe at that moment, all that mattered was that stew. I always think, and I thought this more as I was reading this, he has thousands of servants, loads of people in this. This is not just them four, by the way. It reads like that, but it's not. If you've inherited everything from Abraham, he's inherited everything. The tents, the people, the servants, the cutlery, for one. And there's not another pan that he can go and boil and make another load of food for himself. As anyone with sibling knows, if your sibling's not going to share, you tend to get in a fight with them. Rather than just think, ah, okay, I'll go and make something else, you will fight for that food. It's ridiculous, but it's what we do. I think he was making a point. Just my opinion. But for all of his life, he has probably been told by his mother, Rebekah, you're not my favorite. He's my favorite. He is above you. Because I've had the verse and I know how it ends. He's above you. You're actually lower than him. I can imagine that's how his life was. And that's how despised he felt by his family. Not by his dad, because it says his dad loved him. But it doesn't say his mum loved him. It says very specifically, one loved one loved the other. It was not a loving family as a whole. As you know, as parents, I am not one, but you love all your children equally, or you should. It's not the case in this family. I think he was making a point, and he was saying, no, you can serve me the food you've cooked. I'm not going and getting my own. You can serve me. Because I'm the eldest, and that's what I should get. I can hear that going round in his head. No, I'm not letting go of this. But then he says a really stupid thing. I'm hungry right now. What is that to me? What is his birthright? Does anyone know? Well, you should know. You've been reading up to now, you should know what it is. His birthright that he's given up is the heir to the covenant that God had with Abraham. And Abraham has now passed on to Isaac. And he has now got to pass it on to Esau. Esau doesn't want it. It says Esau despised it. Why would you despise such an amazing thing as that? Doesn't make sense in my head. But I suppose at the time, as he says quite rightly, something else was more important at that moment in time. He did not think ahead to the future. He thought in the moment, right now, I want this. And often that is how we think. Hold my hands up, I also do it too. God always thinks about the future. There is a reason. And he wants everyone else to think that too. You need to be aware of what's going on now, but don't despise your birthright. The birthright he's talking about, as we said, is the covenant. That gives them authority. What authority, you might ask? Well, authority over the family, the servants, the livestock, a normal kind of authority. But there's also a different kind of authority. It gives him a heavenly authority. And that is what he's thrown away. Quite literally. In chapter 26, I'm not going to read all of it, but this is something that stood out to me as how powerful that covenant was. This is Isaac now. Chapter 26, verses 12 to 16. Isaac planted crops in that land, and the same year reaped a hundredfold because the Lord blessed him. The man became rich, and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Move away from us, you have become too powerful for us." If someone asks you to leave their land, which previously you were okay to be in, because you're now too powerful, that's not you. That's God. If I was Abimelech, I'd be saying, you should stay, because look at all the plants and everything you've grown, hundredfold. But nope. They were afraid of this power. That is the favor that Abraham had with God. That's been passed on now to Isaac. That is what Esau's despised. And he can't access. Which is very, very sad. In my opinion. Well, let's go to chapter 27. Because as we know, chapter 27 is where all the good stuff actually happens. That's where the story comes to a conclusion with Esau and Jacob. Not a conclusion, but he's had enough now. Verse 22 to 29 says this. Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he proceeded to bless him. So, for context, for those who don't know the story, don't know how you don't, it's a really well-known story. Esau's gone out to get some food to give back to his dad so his dad can bless him. Whilst this is happening, Jacob has come in his clothes to deceive his father and take his blessing. He did not recognize him, for his hands. Oh, sorry, I've read that bit. "Are you really my son Esau?" he asked. "I am," he replied. Then he said, "My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing." So he's lied to his dad. Which is okay, because his dad didn't love him in this scenario. He's a mummy's boy. He does not care. Jacob brought it to him, and he ate. And he brought some wine, and he drank. Then his father said, "Come here, my son, and kiss me." So he went to him and kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you heaven's dew and earth's riches and abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and people bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." That blessing he's just stolen from Esau. In doing so, he's completed a prophecy. If you read the verse, slightly different, slightly altered, but he is now over his brother. His dad's just given him that authority, that power. He's now over his brother. As we continue on to the story, Esau then wants to kill him. Understandably. He's just taken something, which now, in the moment, means a lot to him. Now it's gone. He's very, very, very unhappy. Didn't matter before, but it matters now. And he wants to kill him. Once his dad's gone, that's what he's going to do. That is his plan. When we were having this discussion in youth about Joseph, we went back to this story because a lot of them didn't understand where it had come from. So we had to go back. And I said, Esau actually was blessed, because if you read the scripture, he said, "Bless me too." And he did bless him. Isaac blessed him. Not the same, not to that extent, but he did bless him. And the end of their story, which is not in my chapters, but in those last verses, "May those curse you who be cursed. May those who curse you be cursed. And those who bless you be blessed." See, now, Esau didn't know that was the blessing. But as you go to the end of the story, Jacob, who's hiding out at this point, by the way, from his brother, who he knows is going to kill him. And he wasted a lot of time hiding, let me tell you. His brother had forgiven him, and he was still hiding. That is a very, very guilty conscience. But this verse, Esau, I think personally God had a conversation with Esau when he was at his angriest and said, "You didn't want it. You do not want it from me, so your brother has taken it. But I will still bless you." And he did, because when they do meet up, Esau's got all these men, all this army coming towards him, and Jacob thinks he's going to kill him. So he very fearfully bows down to him and says, essentially, "I'm sorry for what I did." And Esau just embraces him and says, "It's fine." In the moment, he was very, very angry. But when we do things in the moment, when we act in the moment, it's not always a good thing. When Abraham had Ishmael, he acted in the moment. His wife was nagging him day in, day out. "God's not given me a son. He told me he would. He's not done it. You need to do this." I don't know how many times, it doesn't say, if he said, "No, not doing it." It just says, and he did it. And he slept with Hagar, and Hagar had Ishmael. He acted in the moment. He didn't stop and say, "God, you have promised this, but she's nagging me, and I need you to make it come a bit quicker." I didn't do that. despite all of this mess, and it is a mess, by the way, this is a family drama. There is no two ways about it. It is like, it reads quite literally like a soap opera. Despite all of this mess, as we learned up to Joseph, God fulfills everything he said he would. And when we read Joseph's story, let me tell you, that's another mess. Big mess. But again, scripture fulfilled, younger, the older serving the younger, Joseph being the younger sibling who becomes prime minister and rules over his brothers. The last verse we read when we had the discussion on Joseph, it said that everything, God blessed him 10 times more than he thought he would. Because his son, who he thought was dead, magically alive again. The famine that was going to wipe them out and kill them, that's made provision for, again, by God. Those mistakes that happened, they were human mistakes. But God turned them into a blessing. If that's one of the things you wanted me to say today that needs to resonate, it's that the mistakes you've made in your past or even now, I can turn them into a blessing and I will. But, and this is where everyone gets angry at God, gets annoyed, there are still consequences. So it probably comes off as quite a harsh message rather than an uplifting one. But it's what the scriptures say. All of them blessings from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the way down the line had blessings, they still had consequences. We have the same opportunity. We have the same opportunities as them. Not in the same light. It's blinding me, but not in the same light as them. But we have instances where in the moment we can choose to act quickly and not think and not pray about it and cause issues for ourselves or for other people. Or we can take it back to God and say, you've promised me this. You said it would happen. It's not happened yet. What do you want me to do about it? It's not easy to sum up three scriptures. I don't think I did it justice, but that is what God said to me through those scriptures. Bert, can you play the song, please? Yeah. This is our opportunity for blessing.